I was hoping you could talk with us today a little bit about how you got started with this book and on your exploration of mentally ill and the criminal justice system.
I actually thought I was pretty well schooled in mental illness because I had covered that as a reporter. And then my own son got sick, and I realized I didn't know anything at all. And I got plunged into this world of catch-22s and protections of civil liberties and hospitals and insurance, and it was just an ongoing nightmare. What happened was that my son became sick while I was in college, and I frankly tried to get him help. I couldn't get him help, and he ended up breaking into a house to take a bubble bath. Luckily, the people weren't at home, and he got arrested. And I was so frustrated. I wanted to help him, and I didn't know how. I discovered that what happened to my son was not some freak occurrence, that right now as we're talking, you got 365,000 people with bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and major depression in jails and prisons. You got a 500,000 on probation. You got 1 million that go through the criminal justice system every year. And the largest public mental facility is not a hospital. It's the Los Angeles County Jail. So I decided I'd write about my son's struggles, and then I'd combine that in a larger story. So I tried to find a jail to go into where I could follow people who had mental illness and then follow them out through the system onto the streets to see what happened. I ended up in Miami, where I followed a series of persons who had schizophrenia through the criminal justice system out onto the streets to see why our system is failing so many people and how we could save money and actually help people rather than doing what we're doing now, which is wasting money and not helping people.
What were some of the things you found out about why people are in jail instead of actually getting the treatment that they need?
And these weren't Hannibal Lecter serial killers. They're people who are sick, who used to be in hospitals, who really need good community services. And unfortunately, because we're in a recession, everybody's cutting back on services. And it's really a case of being penny wise and pound foolish in many cases. Let me give you an example. In the Miami, right now, studies show that about 16% of all persons in jails and prisons have a mental illness that is the reason why they're in jail or prison. And that's different from somebody who is, let's say, has a mental illness and is a bank robber. These are people who may be more homeless, chronically ill, things like my son breaking into a house to take a bubble bath. They end up in jail and prison. Okay, there are 1,200 of them right now in the Miami jail. It costs $100,000 a day. That's $36 million a year. And they're not getting any better. For half that, you could put them in affordable housing. You could get them an ACT team, a team that actually would work with them. And you could actually help them get better. And that's an example of where we're wasting money every day that we shouldn't be wasting, where we could actually help people. Jails and hospital emergency rooms are the most costly, least effective way of dealing with somebody who runs afoul of the law, who has mental illness. You know, everybody's under pressure to cut, cut, cut. But again, you have to do those cuts wisely and look for ways to save money and get maximum benefit. And that's part of what I hope to talk about when I come out to Texas.
What do you think are some of the ways that Texas might need to think about increasing its expenditures to help people who are dealing with mental illness? Recent studies show that Texas is the 49th in the country in terms of per capita spending for those with mental illness.
What you have to understand is are two things. One, that we now know that schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression are illnesses. They're not necessarily the fault of the person who got them, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's, in many ways, you know, the heart can get sick, so can the mind. The second thing is you are paying money right now. You're spending money right now. You're wasting money right now, and you just don't realize it. You know, I write in my book about a guy named Freddie Gilbert, and all of us have a Freddie Gilbert. If you go down to Austin, you're going to see Freddie Gilbert. A study found that at 12 at any time in a population of 2 million in Miami, 1,200 were homeless. But most of those people moved through the system except for 507, and they were chronically homeless. All of them had a mental illness. All of them had been arrested. And you go down there, and you're going to find the same thing in Austin. The guy who has a co-occurring problem, he has a drug and alcohol problem, and he's constantly in jail for 2 weeks back on the street. Those people cost $40,000 to $60,000 a year. They are high users of all kinds of services. and that's a drain on your tax dollar. And just by ignoring them, you're going to continue to pay that. Let me give you another example. The Washington Post did a study. They wanted to see who were making 911 calls. They found out that the number one guy making 911 calls made over 200 calls in 1 year had schizophrenia. And because we do things so well in Washington, every one of those calls costs about $900. That's an example of waste because of untreated mental illness that you don't even know is related to mental illness. So we are spending money. And jails and emergency rooms, again, are some of the costliest, least effective ways to deal. How do you go around that? You want to talk money? Let's talk money. Well, you got two ways. You either have to spend your money more wisely. And right now, one big opportunity that states are missing is this. Because of the wars that our soldiers are fighting, the federal government's authorized a lot of money for veterans. And yet, when somebody goes into a mental health center, they're rarely asked if they're a veteran. If they're a veteran, they have access to a great pool of money to help them with psychological problems. That frees up money for somebody who's not a veteran in the mental health system. That's just a very small thing, having people ask about that. If you can't cut money, if you can't find more ways to use it, then you look at taxes. Well, of course, no politician's going to say raise taxes. But let me cite you an example. Right now, a study shows that 44% of all cigarettes in the United States are bought by persons with mental health diagnosis. They are huge consumers of cigarettes. Why? Because nicotine actually alters their brain chemistry and they feel better. 44% of all cigarettes sold in the country are sold to people with mental health diagnosis. Okay, what's that mean? Well, that means maybe you should think about tacking on a tax on cigarettes that would go specifically for mental health issues. Virginia has one of the lowest taxes. And if we just raised ours, 10 cents on cigarettes, we would raise $100 million that could be earmarked for mental health. So you got to think of creative ways. In Illinois, they put on a homeless fee on all kinds of real estate transactions, raised $25 million just to do that. So you can do targeting taxing. It's never popular, but there are some that make sense. You either have to either raise the taxes, which, of course, people don't want to do, or you got to start doing cost avoidance like they're doing in San Antonio, and start jail diversion programs.
How's your son doing today?
He's doing fantastic, actually. My book ends after his first arrest, and, you know, like many parents, I thought, wow, it's all over, everything's cool, this is no big deal. Well, he went off his medication, which is a common problem with persons with bipolar disorder, and he ended up getting in trouble again. And this time, he got tasered by the police. And the reason I'm telling you that story is, yeah, I've written a book. I have former Washington Post connections. I live in one of the wealthiest counties in the United States, so you'd think that services would be great there. And yet, I couldn't get my son help and ended up getting tasered. So what chance does somebody sitting in Austin who has no connections, has no money, has no knowledge of the system, what chance do they have of getting through that? Well, after that, he had another breakdown. But this time, he actually got plugged in. He had a crisis intervention team officer pick him up. He was walking. My son was walking naked because he thought he was invisible. And he was psychotic. And they took him to a treatment center. They had a case manager. She helped him get to the psychiatrist, got him on the proper medications, got him into a group home, got him into a job. And now my son, who's 33, we've been dealing with this for 10 years, is what's called peer-to-peer, which is a person with mental illness trained to help other people with mental illness. This is not a case of us not knowing what to do. We know that medications are highly effective in a large percentage of persons with mental illness. We know that if you provide someone with housing, I mean, how can you get better if you're sleeping under a bridge and eating out of a garbage can? If you give somebody a safe place to live, if you give them counseling, if you give them the opportunity to go to work, if you give them wraparound services where you actually help them get moved forward with their lives, they will recover. Now, a small part will not. Some people are so sick that we have to take care of them, and that's just part of living in a civilized society. But most can recover. But we have to provide those tools. And when you don't provide the tools, it's not going to happen. And what we've always done historically, it's always been about money, and we've always tried to do it on the cheap. And that has been the ruination and why we haven't gotten any made much progress.
Do you think that in addition to the issues of money, some of the stereotypes and misconceptions about mental illness also play a role in the lack of resources that are available for treatment?
The big problem is stigma. And we're scared of people, especially people who have a mental illness or are ranting and raving. We see reports like Virginia Tech. And so it's a very frightening thing. But you have to look at why do we treat mental illness differently? I don't think there's any shame in having a mental illness. I think the shame is not helping people with mental illnesses. But one of the problems is this. We see somebody who's psychotic, and we want to say, oh, well, the devil's in them. Or we want to say, oh, they deserve it because they're on drugs. Or, oh, they probably did something. Maybe they used cocaine all their life. Or they're a bad person. Why do we want to say that? Why do we want to not admit that this could be an illness, that this could happen to anyone? It happened to my son just out of the blue. There were no warning signs. Because if we admit that, if we honestly say to ourselves, this person has a biological problem in their brain, then we realize it could happen to us. We realize it could happen to our children. We realize it could happen to somebody we love, and we don't want to admit that.
For Texas, what do you think are some of the priority recommendations that would help improve treatment for those with mental illness?
There's a simple formula. First, you got to realize that you're spending money anyway. And then you have to decide. What we've really done here that's so tragic is we closed down all the state institutions. We moved this. The reason we closed those institutions was not mercy. It was not compassion. It was money. The federal government said, we'll start paying for persons with mental disorders. So the state, that's why they started closing down those hospitals. Well, the feds have never given the states enough money, never created a good community network. And so now we're in a situation where a large percentage of people are ending up in jails and prisons. So what we've done is turned it into a criminal justice problem instead of a mental health problem. It's costly, it's wastely, and it's morally wrong. And we're depending on jails and prisons, mental health courts, jail diversion programs. We're depending on law enforcement to solve this problem. They're part of the solution, but the real solution is everybody working together, community mental health services, stop thinking in terms of silos and realizing that mental health is a transportation, it's a veterans issue, it's a education issue, it's a jail criminal justice, it's all these things. And you've got to start working together. And when you do that, you're going to find economies that will help your overall budget, not to mention how helping people is going to make them into taxpaying folks instead of drains on the taxpayer system.